Live from Chicago, this is Bruce Dumont with our Beyond the Beltway analysis of national politics, featuring occasional injections of rumor and innuendo, all offered up by our panel of political insiders, pundits, power brokers, public servants, and most importantly, plain-speaking Americans from coast to coast. Tonight featuring commentary by Democrat John Cullerton, Republican Dan Proft, and author Carol Felsenthal. Our program tonight coming to you from our home base on State Street, that great street in Chicago, where our toll-free lines are open at 1-800-723-8289. That's 1-800-723-8289. If you'd like to email us a comment, our email address is btbtalk@aol.com. And if you'd like to join us on the World Wide Web, www.beyondthebeltway.com. Nice to have you with us tonight. Another full hour, 2 hours of talking politics this evening. In the second hour, we're going to be reaching out to the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, and we'll have a live report from Harrisburg on what is likely to happen in the next 72 hours in Pennsylvania. Of course, it's been the focal point of politics in America for the last 5 weeks. It's other than probably the buildup to Iowa and New Hampshire, I don't think any state has had so much of a focus given the last 6 weeks or 5 weeks in this campaign, and a lot has happened in that 6 week period. Carol Felsenthal joins us. Carol, nice to have you with us.
Thank you.
Carol is author of a new book called Clinton in Exile. She's one of the leading freelance writers and authors in the country. Nice to have you with us. We'll talk about the book a little bit later on. But when you watched the debate the other night, there's been a lot of debate and controversy about the debate. Do you think that ABC went overboard in pressing Barack Obama, or was it fair?
I thought that it made good television, and I've been blogging for the Huffington Post lately, and I described Barack as looking like a seething wimp, which is he had a very, very, very bad night, and I think you can make much of the fact that it wasn't for 45 minutes into the debate that substantive issues were raised. But I was thinking, as I was coming over here, Barack or Hillary could have said, why don't we talk about the mortgage crisis, or why don't we talk about $4 gasoline? And as far as Stephanopoulos and Charlie Gibson go, they had the highest ratings, more than 10 million people. I think, in a way, it was a very interesting debate. It was unfair, but the debates before that, you could arguably say were unfair to Hillary.
John Cullerton joins us. John is a supporter of Barack Obama, a longtime member of the Illinois State Senate and Illinois General Assembly, over 30 years. You've served with Barack Obama. Mm-hmm. We're going to be talking about that relationship that you have with Barack over the years. But what was your reaction to the debate and the controversy following the debate?
Well, first of all, during the debate, I was actually voting in the Illinois General Assembly. We were in session till 9:30 that night.
You didn't vote present.
We can talk about voting present, too, later on if you want. So I've only been able to watch, I actually raced home and watched the reaction to the mm-hmm. debate. And obviously Barack would not prefer to talk about the negative things that were brought up. He does much better, I think, if he talks about issues. He has a tough time going negative. I think that's part of his aura, obviously, that he's got a new politics and that wants to talk about something other than what is traditionally been talked about. And so I think he would have preferred to have talked about the things that would help him in his general election against Mr. McCain.
Dan Proft also joins us. He is a political commentator for WLS Radio, former political operative. In fact, we shared the WLS microphones immediately after that debate, and we sort of agreed on the air that Barack Obama spent most of the time on defense. As you have now had several days to think about it, he described it as political trivia, that the moderators were bogged down in pursuing political trivia.
I mean, it's comedy coming from a campaign that is predicated on political trivia. I mean, his entire campaign is Pavlovian buzzwords, change and hope, and it's all about his style and his transcendental qualities, these kind of amorphous transcendental qualities that nobody can quite describe, but it has nothing to do with policy. I'm happy to talk about Barack Obama wanting to double the capital gains tax, wanting to nationalize healthcare, particularly in a general election context. But the all of the kind of hand-wringing about, oh, it was so unfair, it was so tough, they didn't even get to all of it. I mean, they brought up Bill Ayers for the first, and it's taken 15 months to bring up Bill Ayers. But they didn't even get to Bill Ayers and Obama connected to Rashid Khalidi, the Columbia University professor who got a grant from this foundation that Obama and Ayers served on together, who was instrumental in bringing Ahmadinejad to Columbia University when he was there, who's very anti-Semitic, this professor. So, I mean, all these things go to what Barack Obama has said this campaign is about. It's about my judgment, right? That's why you should elect me, because I have exercise and I have better judgment. And all of these issues go to his judgment.
Is it fair, in your view, John Cullerton, is Bill Ayers an issue that the voters should know about?
Well, it's been out there for a few months. People have known about it, and I don't think he's been around Chicago for quite some time, and he hasn't bothered too many people around here. He's been apparently leading a somewhat respectable life for a number of years. The mayor has said afterwards, he said, "Hey, come on, what's the big deal with Ayers?" You know, so I think it was blown up. Again, my point is that I don't think, the issue is blown up, right? I think Barack obviously would rather talk about things that he views as being much more positive from his point of view in the general election. And he's kind of fending off Clinton, you know, and I'm quite certain he's going to be the nominee, so that he'd just rather not do that and rather be focusing, not even being with her in a debate, rather than debating McCain.
In every campaign, it seems to me, Carol, there's a period of every campaign where a friend of some candidate is going to get that candidate in trouble. So is this just another part of a campaign, and it just so happens that this guy happens to be, you know, very radical and unrepentant about, you know, trying to blow up buildings in the 60s and 70s?
He's a fascinating character, and I've been listening to Sean Hannity go after Bill Ayers now for a few months. He has not let it go, Sean
right.
Hannity on Fox News. And I've lived in Chicago all my life. I've been year after year to New Year's Eve parties with Bill and Bernadine Dorn, his wife, who was also served prison time.
Yes.
Was a former bomb thrower. And I think that this issue, because I still remember on September 11th, 2001, I never got to the newspapers that day. I'm a four newspaper a day reader.
Mm-hmm.
And in bed that night on September 11th, I was reading the New York Times, and in the most ill-timed news story in book publishing history, Bill Ayers' book, a memoir, it was part fictional, part real, came out, was published on September 11th. And here's this article that was in print long before those
right.
planes hit, hours before the planes hit, and it opens with Bill Ayers saying we didn't plant enough bombs, we should have done more. It was striking. I almost fell out of bed when I read it.
So there's no question that he's unrepentant about what he did.
But the timing was so messed up. He wouldn't have ever said that if the New York Times reporter who interviewed him in his kitchen in Hyde Park had come to interview him after September 11th. He would have put it in a more... In a less shocking.
The question I'm going to give you a chance to respond to that. I also want to get reaction from everybody else. To what extent is friends of a candidate? To what extent should friends be engulfed in a political campaign? 1-800-723-8289. Back shortly from Chicago.
You've heard the horror stories about meth. It's a powerful, dangerous, and highly addictive drug that's having a serious impact on our communities and horrible effects on families across the country. But there is reason for hope. Treatment for meth addiction is available, and it works. All it takes is someone to care. If you know someone using meth, get involved and help them get on the path to recovery. For more information, visit methresources.gov or call 800-662-HELP. Sponsored by Office of National Drug Control Policy.
It's time to stop what you're doing and go red for women.
Go red.
Start loving your heart today. Visit goredforwomen.org.
Go red.
And take the Go Red Heart Checkup. Get to know your own heart.
Go red.
The American Heart Association invites you to help stop heart disease.
Go red.
To go red for women and give your heart the love it deserves.
We'll be right back. From Birmingham, Alabama to Bakersfield, California, you're listening to Beyond the Beltway. We're talking about last week's debate on ABC, in which Barack Obama said that it was a good example of gotcha debates. He thought the media was ganging up on him, said there was a lot of political trivia, a lot of time was wasted, took 45 minutes to get into the significant issues, and also then said that it's a preview of the Republican campaign that is going to be a run against him in November. And the question that I had asked was, since the issue of Bill Ayers, a former radical from the Weather Underground, has now come into the campaign, the question that I ask is, if you are a friend or an acquaintance of a candidate, to what extent does that become part of your personal record? It obviously has in the last several days in this campaign, and you were going to make a point, Dan Pratt.
I mean, it depends who the friend is and what the association is. I mean, it's not something you can categorize one way or the other in totality. Bill Ayers is not just an unrepentant domestic terrorist, which is exactly what he is. He's also a campaign contributor to Barack Obama. He hosted a fundraiser at his home for Barack Obama. They served on a nonprofit board together. They gave a grant to an Arab American entity that is very anti-Israel. The board president calls the creation of Israel a catastrophe. I mean, this is not like they got their coffee from the same place in Hyde Park. This is an association that Barack Obama has to answer for, particularly when he says, elect me because of my judgment.
I think maybe if Brock had said, I agree with the fact that Mr. Ayers blew up someplace years ago, and that and Brock said him in his own words, he agrees with him, but he's made it real clear, and we've got this whole special word you're supposed to use now, that you condemn and repudiate.
Yes.
these words, that's the litmus test, that you're supposed to make sure you use both of those words, otherwise it doesn't count. I mean, I quite frankly, even
and
when
disown
this,
and disavow, because
when this came up in the past, there's been McCain had got endorsed by some guy who made some anti-Catholic statements. Even when that came up, I didn't think it was going to register. I think if there's some actions that you take or some words out of your own mouth. I mean, Barack made a mistake when he made his bitter remark. It was out of his own mouth. I thought that was very, very hurtful to him, and apparently it hasn't affected too much in the polls. But I thought when he says it himself, it's different. These guilt by association, let's talk about even Resco. I mean, the fact that he knew Resco, that was very troubling.
But it's not just about knowing Resco.
It's the action. Well, the actions. The actions are more important. This guy, the fact that you're on a board together with somebody, I've been on boards with people. I don't know. I didn't appoint him. I just happened to be there. I'm not going to necessarily, if I find somebody on there I don't like who even had a criminal record, I'm not going to necessarily leave the board.
What about a fundraiser at the home?
The fundraiser 20 years after a guy has been in the society and he's a constituent and he wants to have a fundraiser for me. I mean, I take money from Republicans.
Even if you
I take money from
Is not the same thing as taking money from an unrepentant domestic terrorist.
But I think given the fact he's running for the state senate at the time, he's a respected person in his community where he's running, and he has a fundraiser for you, you go there. It doesn't mean that you're signing on to his past acts or his past words.
It's also Hyde Park, and Hyde Park is a wonderful, interesting, but parochial community. And I have many friends in Hyde Park, and they are utmost respectable people, and they're part of the community.
But would you acknowledge, though, that Hyde Park is not reminiscent of the entire nation?
Right, but when he starts in his political campaigns, he's going to go to his friends and his neighbors. And I think Michelle Obama was also friends with Bernadine and Bill. And
It's not going to move any votes. I think in the general election. That's all you got.
No, we've got a lot of stuff, but that's just one thing.
Let's go to calls. Let's go to Sioux Falls, South Dakota. Marilyn is listening to us on KELO. Go ahead. Nice to hear from South Dakota tonight.
Thank you. I just want to overshadow my question with, why are things only damaging to Republicans when someone in their past has done or said something, and not to Democrats? And the reason I'm saying that is because, what if McCain had someone who was involved in his life, like Ayers is to Obama, such as someone who had been bombing abortion clinics? I think it'd be a lot different than someone who had in the past been bombing police stations. And I think the only reason that this is not being, everyone is downplaying this, is because he's a Democrat. Obama's a Democrat. You know.
I don't know if it's the only...
It's being discussed now.
I don't know if the only reason it's being downplayed is because Obama's a Democrat, but I think it is being downplayed, and I think there is two sets of standards, and I think that if McCain did have an association like the caller references, he would not get away with a completely intellectually dishonest rationalization that Obama gave in terms of his answer in that debate. That was a joke to compare...
By referencing Tom Colburn.
Yeah, to reference it to Tom Colburn, because they disagree on a policy issue, but they still get along in the Senate. That's the same thing as having an association with Bill Ayers. Are you kidding me?
I think
Let's
said
go to
that,
Jim. Go ahead, Jeff.
I think you just said that Colburn had said something that he disagreed with totally, that he viewed as being really kind of an outrageous statement, but he said he's still friends and he doesn't have to own the statement that his friend had said.
We're not asking him to own a statement. We're asking him to own an association with
an
domestic terrorist.
Yes.
Let's go
an
to South Elgin.
Not any of the words.
Jim is listening to us on WLS, our flagship station. Go ahead.
Good evening. Democratic congressional... member Luis Gutierrez has a saying in Spanish all the time: "Tell me with who you walk with, or with whom you are, and I'll tell you who you are." And he's been saying that for years. And now all of a sudden, for Obama to not affiliate himself with that is hypocritical. And also, we're also seeing a good example of how the media is finally doing its job a little bit. And if they did this consistently over the years, the Democrats would certainly be a lot differently portrayed in the public.
Carol, what about it? I mean, one of the criticisms that Bill Clinton made months ago was that Obama really, you know, had been given a pass by everybody. Is this an example of the chickens coming home to roost in this particular case?
To coin a
different story, but
you know, I do believe that when the history of this campaign is written, Saturday Night Live is going to be at the top of the chapter.
Yeah, I think so.
I thought that they captured exactly this sort of ultra care with which Barack was treated and the lack of scrutiny of his slogans and his rhetoric. On the other hand, Hillary got a pass for a long time, and I think John McCain gets a pass in a way too. I mean, you know, one of the things that I found most
she didn't get a pass on the Bosnia story, right?
No, but
is the Bosnia story, in your view, is that the biggest slip she's made in the campaign?
I think it's I think it is the most embarrassing, the most humiliating. It makes her look utterly ridiculous. It made her husband look utterly ridiculous when he tried to excuse her by saying, oh, she said it at 11 o'clock at night, she was exhausted, when actually she had said it several times before.
During day,
and it
right.
was always during the day when she should have been sharper. I mean, and then to have that video come forward, and the fact that she took not only two entertainers with her, but she took her beloved. Nobody would dispute that she loves her daughter very much. If you would you take a child? Would I take one of my children into a sniper zone? Never.
What about the way in which she answered that question the other night? She was really like, she had no place to go.
Just like somebody wrote the call.
Yeah, John? Carol, I think the video is what really made it different.
The video sinking these candidates.
Right, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, and her statement to your point, I mean, it was basically as artful as you can say, I lied, without saying I lied.
When you look at the debate, and again, and there's been a little bit of discussion of it, but it seems to me that from a standpoint of what was said and what was sort of new, it seems to me that Hillary Clinton's position on Iran and Israel, saying that an attack on Israel, there would be a massive retaliation, not defining that, but massive retaliation are not two words Democrats usually use in the same sentence, and also sort of increasing that umbrella to suggest that maybe other nations above and beyond Israel would also be retaliated against if they attacked. And I'm wondering if, when you're talking about a decision that's going to be made by the next president of the United States, is that the biggest maybe potential mistake?
Well, it certainly was a big issue, Bruce. But you know, we're not talking. That's not the first thing we talked about.
Well,
tonight.
I know that,
and that's typical of the rest of the reaction.
But people may not people may not get to that issue.
Yeah.
So
well,
now we're there.
She's distinguishing herself from Barack, and she was running against John McCain in the general election.
Right.
And I think that...
But to me, that was a big
It was
issue.
A big deal. Huge. Yes. Absolutely.
And what's your as a Democrat, what is your reaction to that response,
Well,
John?
It was probably an over-response. I mean, certainly to say you're supportive of Israel is not is pretty good politics. And we do have a special relationship with Israel. If Israel was attacked, we would react. But she was talking about if another... maybe a Jordan was attacked by Iran, and we were supposed to protect Jordan, and that was beyond, I think, anything had been talked about.
But Barack's answer to that about attacking Israel was a little softer. He didn't say
He didn't say massive.
It was a little softer, and then she also came back real strong when she said that Ahmadinejad would never meet with her in the White House.
Right. And that was a veiled shot at Obama, because Obama's position on Israel is softer. But the funny thing about Hillary Clinton's statement, and it was a breathtaking statement that got lost in the post-debate, because not just because of the nature of the debate, but also because of Barack Obama complaining that he was hit too hard. But her statement was Hillary's statement was essentially an adoption of the Bush Doctrine.
Yeah,
I mean that's what
right.
it was.
Yeah, it was pretty dramatic.
Yeah.
Well, but now in context, we're going to take more calls, but I also want to talk about the most recent controversy, and this was a piece of tape that, Hillary Clinton, a speech that she gave to a recent closed door fundraiser, that's now part of what everybody's talking about, and that is her sort of back of the hand swipe at MoveOn.org, and how the supporters and the firebrands within MoveOn.org have disrupted the caucuses, and on one hand she wants their support, on the other hand she's given them the back of her hand. Back shortly from Chicago. When was the last time someone offered you a second chance to save thousands of dollars? If you owe the IRS or state at least $15,000, American Tax Relief is offering you a second chance to eliminate up to 85% of your delinquent taxes. Thousands of honest, hardworking Americans have turned to American Tax Relief for the help they need. Look, your tax problem isn't going to go away. In fact, it's only going to get worse unless you get help. Call 1-800-449-1415 for a one-time professional fee. American Tax Relief can get you the second chance you've never had before to save up to 85% on the taxes you owe. Get the second chance you deserve and save up to 85% on your delinquent taxes. Call American Tax Relief for a free consultation to see how much money they can save you. Call 1-800-449-1415. That's 1-800-449-1415. From Sacramento, California to Austin, Texas, you're listening to Beyond the Beltway. Thank you very much for joining us tonight. Our Democrat tonight is John Cullerton. He's a longtime member of the Illinois General Assembly, a state senator who served for many years with Barack Obama. Our Republican tonight is Dan Proft. He is a political commentator for WLS and a longtime, you know, political activist on the Republican side of the slate. And also Carol Felsenthal is with us. She's one of the country's leading writers, freelance writers, and her new book is called Clinton in Exile, A President Out of the White House. The book will hit the bookstalls on May 6th. We'll talk a little bit about the book before we go off the air this evening. And again, before we go too much further, we got a lot of calls on the line. But I do want to mention that this past week we announced the inductees, at least some of the inductees, into the National Radio Hall of Fame, and also announced the class of 2008 that will soon be going to the polls. And the inductees this year into the Radio Hall of Fame, Jess Kane, the great broadcaster, late broadcaster from Boston. These are all posthumous inductees, along with Bob Collins, former morning man on WGN Radio in Chicago, and the legendary Dick Whittinghill, who for over 20 years dominated Los Angeles radio on KMPC. They will all be inducted on November 8th during a national broadcast from Chicago. Then the public will have an opportunity to vote in the national syndicated category. These are active broadcasters. Bob Costas, host of the syndicated show Costas on the Radio. Focus on the Family, hosted by Dr. James Dobson, Dr. Laura Schlesinger, and Howard Stern, who labored in the vineyards of terrestrial radio, now works for Sirius Radio. They will be competing against one another in the national active category. In the national pioneer category, Art Bell, one of the leading broadcasters of many, many years, pioneering sort of the late night discussion of all things extraterrestrial, outer terrestrial. Ralph Emery from WSM, one of the great country music performers of all time and disc jockeys. The legendary show from the 30s and the 40s, Gangbusters, which was hosted by the father of General Norman Schwarzkopf. And Barry Farber, the legendary talk show host from New York. Then there are two categories for active broadcasters at the local and regional level. Howie Carr from WRKO in Boston. Steve Dahl from Magic 104 in Chicago. Bob Grant, the controversial talk show host, now on WABC in New York. And Ron Owens, who has owned San Francisco for a couple of decades now. They will compete against one another. And in the local regional pioneer category, from Cincinnati, Gary Burbank, one of the great broadcasters in the history of a great station, WLW. Harry Callis, the longtime voice of the Philadelphia Phillies, who I found out was born in Chicago at Grant Hospital and raised in Naperville, Illinois for over 20 years, the voice of the Philadelphia Phillies, great baseball broadcaster. Charlie Tuna, who's owned Los Angeles for about 25 years, also competing in that category. And Jim Zabel. Jim Zabel, if you grew up in Iowa, he is from Des Moines, WHO in Des Moines, and he has for 49 years has been the voice of Iowa Hawkeye basketball and football. So they will all compete against each other. The big event coming up on Saturday, November 8th at the Renaissance Hotel in Chicago. There'll be more on it next week. And also next week, I will tell you how you will be able to vote. The online balloting will begin on May 1st, run through July 15th, and it will be an opportunity for people who love radio to participate in determining the inductees into the National Radio Hall of Fame. Lots of callers on the line. Let's go to Pennsylvania. Bill is listening to us in Scranton, listening to us tonight on the Internet. Go ahead, Bill.
Hi, Bruce, and hello to your guest. A very intelligent discussion, as always. I would just like to tell you, Pennsylvania, I think, is a microcosm of the country. Everybody's dug in, you know, half and half for Obama, half and half for Hillary, and I think the undecided are up for grabs, and I think that's the way it'll play out. Can I give you my overview on this thing?
Please do. We'll do another whole hour on it in the next hour, but give us a preview right now.
Okay. I'm an Obama supporter. I suspect that he will not get the nomination for exactly what you've been talking about for the last half hour, because he is an unknown quantity, and those kind of trivial, frivolous, whatever you want to call them, things stick because people don't know him. And I think in the end, the Democratic Party is going to go with what what they're safe with, a known quantity, however you want to describe it. Because
so, Bill, are you suggesting that the voters are going to make this decision, or is it the superdelegates that are going to begin to swing away from the will of the Democratic primary voter?
I think it's going to be so close that it's up for grabs, to be honest with you. So they're going to be faced with the decision of which way do we go. And unfortunately, I think they're going to go the wrong way, which is their long-standing history.
Let's let John Cullerton respond to that, and then we'll go back to you,
well,
John.
Bill, first of all, I'm glad you are an Obama supporter. So am I. I served with him for 8 years in the General Assembly, and he's a great guy, very talented, and will make a great president. I predict that at the end of the next 10 primaries, Barack's going to be about 100 votes short. Hillary's going to be a little over 200 votes short. There's going to be 320 undeclared superdelegates. Al Gore, Nancy Pelosi, Howard Dean, Harry Reid are all going to tell those delegates on June 6th, we're not going to wait for 2.5 months. I want everybody to declare who you're for. We don't have to have a convention to do that. Just publicly declare who you're for. Barack Obama will get a minimum of 100 of those votes, and he will then declare that he has the 2,025 votes that he needs. Right. She's going to be boxed then at that point in time in a position where she's going to have to say, well, I think people might change their mind, even though they publicly decided for Obama. And that's going to basically say Obama's got it, and then he can start campaigning against McCain starting 2.5 months before the convention. That's my prediction. I hope what you're talking about is not true, because I just don't see it. I cannot imagine a situation now, short of some unbelievable scandal that is just not going to happen, where she could get the nomination without totally alienating so many of the Democratic base.
Right on.
If he gets it, he's going to have to work real hard at getting the Hillary supporters. And I'm not a top advisor to the Obama campaign, but I would tell them right now to stop even responding to Hillary. Forget you're even running against Hillary, because this is not going to change dramatically. This whole race in your state, even if she won by 10 points, she might pick up 9 delegates. She's not going to have enough delegates.
Nine more than him.
What if she wins some of the primaries that come after,
difference.
Like Indiana?
Doesn't make any difference.
Like
she can
Kentucky?
She can win almost all of them. It's unlikely, but he's going to win Oregon. He's going to win North Carolina. She's still going to... Okay, so he'll be 110 delegates away from the total.
There'll be some moral suasion if she wins Pennsylvania big, which she might because of the undecideds, and then if she wins Indiana. But, you know, something happened this week that I think was very important, and that's when David Boren and Sam Nunn came out and endorsed Obama. And these are two ultra-establishment figures, and Sam
very
Nunn is definitely right of center in foreign affairs. They're both experts on foreign affairs, and I thought that was something that was really telling about Obama. But still, if Hillary comes up with a 15-point lead in Pennsylvania, I think she might because of the older people. And they don't trust Obama. He had 1 year in the U.S. Senate. They think he's a thin reed to carry the election on his back. Unfortunately, I think the Democrats have two candidates who both have problems because there's a lot of other stuff that's going to come out about
her. Is Obama at this point, is he frozen in his position, as John suggested?
I actually agree with John largely. I think the only way that Hillary can make a case that's even quasi-compelling is if she somehow manages to pile up enough votes to overtake the popular vote lead. And then she could say, well, he's got delegates, but I've got the popular vote.
But even then, that's a specious argument.
No, I'm not saying it's
about delegates.
I understand it's about delegates. I'm saying in terms of having a compelling argument to make, particularly in light of what happened in 2000, and she could go back and say, you know, wait a second, I thought we were the party that said we won 2000 and we got it taken from us.
Otherwise,
I think John's right.
On the stage of the Kodak Theater about 3 months ago, there was almost a standing ovation when the concept of the dream ticket was presented. Do you think this is a dream ticket now, or is this a dream ticket for Republicans now?
No, it's a nightmare ticket. There's no way these two are going to be on the same ticket.
He does not help Barack Obama get elected against McCain. I would suspect, my guess is that I think somebody who had supported Clinton, military background, who perhaps had actually been vetted himself?
Wesley Clark.
It's got to be Wesley Clark.
That's no, I actually I think
or
I think,
David Boren.
No, I think the
yeah,
best vice president
of the University of Oklahoma
for the Democrats.
The best vice president for Barack Obama to pick, I think, for to help him. This is a Republican talking, but I honestly believe this. Jim Webb, the senator from Virginia.
Webb was the same type of issue. Same type of issue.
Yeah.
Same type of guy. Military
call.
Guy.
And Ron in St. Joseph, Michigan, listening to us on WLS. Go ahead, you're on the air.
Good evening. From a Vietnam veteran's perspective on the bombing issues with the Bel Airs and the Weather Underground, they killed three members of their own group when they blew up a bomb by accident. The rest of them were bathrooms that were blown up, something like a high school prank. Nobody was really hurt. There was one person who was slightly injured in that bombing, but you have to put in perspective what they were trying to stop. They were trying to stop the U.S. bombing of Vietnam. Were you breaking the Geneva Rules of Convention, dropping napalm, dropping carpet bombing, dropping Agent Orange, weapons of mass destruction on a people who did nothing to us? That is the bomb. So the bomber... McCain,
Ron,
is the
do you
hero.
Want to wait, Ron? Ron, excuse me. Do you want to try to in the course of a political campaign for president? Do you want to try to justify the bombing of buildings in the 60s and 70s?
No, I'm just trying to put it into perspective. That's
okay.
All. That's all. Of course, you cannot get the point out rationally to the people who are not going to think. Of course,
right, we got to move on. 1-800-723-8029 from coast to coast and border to border. I'm Bruce Dumont, back with more calls live from Chicago.
For free confidential small business advice, call SCORE at 800-634-0245 or log on to score.org. Every year, thousands of people get help from SCORE when starting or growing their companies, and you can be one of them.
My SCORE counselor taught me how to create a business plan and make sound financial projections so that I could get a small business loan. I don't think I could have approached my bank so confidently without SCORE's help.
SCORE mentors can help with business planning, cash flow management, and market analysis.
My SCORE mentor walked me through the steps of identifying a market, researching the competition, pricing my product, and so much more.
Call SCORE at 800-634-0245 to meet with experts who have been in your shoes.
All I really needed was a sounding board for my ideas, someone I could trust. My SCORE counselor talked me through my business questions and gave me the courage I needed to expand.
If you're a small business owner or thinking about starting a company, call SCORE today, 800-634-0245, or visit score.org for free confidential advice. SCORE is a nonprofit association and a resource partner with the U.S. Small Business Administration.
Rooster Mont back in Chicago. Dan Proft, I want to give you an opportunity to say on the air what you were saying off the air about the challenge of saving Hillary's core base if she's not the nominee, because a lot of these people, as John suggested, they may not be running to Barack Obama.
No, I mean, the interesting thing was that ABC poll that came out last week showed that actually more Hillary supporters said they would not vote for Obama than Obama supporters said they wouldn't vote for Hillary, and that kind of runs counter to the conventional wisdom.
Sure, right.
So, I mean, I just think that for the longest time, I've agreed with what we all just agreed with it makes no sense for Obama to pick Hillary. But the flip side of that is Obama struggles against McCain in big swing states that Hillary's winning, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Missouri. And would putting Hillary on the ticket if Obama's the nominee help him be more competitive in those states, which I think he stands to almost certainly lose straight up against McCain.
Why do you think she would go on the ticket?
Well,
if she stays in the Senate, Bill Clinton has a plan for her to become Senate Majority Leader. He was talking about that before she entered the campaign.
He's always got a plan for something.
Is he going to manage that a little bit better than he managed her?
Of course, one of the things you can say about Hillary is that she ran a terrible campaign, and
I think
it is justified to say how would she run the country?
You know,
when
no matter what happens in this election next year in the U.S. Senate, there's going to be a lot of volatility because these people were picking and choosing among these senators.
She could become governor of New York. That's the other possibility for Hillary. But I certainly think she's going to be back in the picture in 2012. She'll probably behind the scenes be working.
Assuming McCain wins, that she comes back.
So my point, Bruce, was that Brock has to start working on getting those Hillary supporters, and that would mean tone it down. No more negative on Clinton. He's going to be the nominee, as based on the theory I just gave you before. Yeah. He's definitely going to be the nominee, and now it's about getting those people to come back to him. And there'll be plenty of time to do it. I don't really concede the Clinton argument that he's going to lose Pennsylvania and Ohio and Florida. Florida would always be close, but I just think that the main thing is to get those Clinton supporters back.
In the last 6 weeks, however, the inevitability of Hillary Clinton has gone by the wayside. It was replaced by the inevitability of Barack Obama, which you now say is still inevitable. This guy was sailing along. One thing that can be said, he's never been able to close the sail. I mean, put the nail in the coffin whenever he had to do it. And now the likability factor about Obama is not as effective as it was 6 weeks ago. There's blood in the water insofar as what the Republicans will do in a campaign. There certainly is an MO that we know about with Republicans, or frankly, even with Democrats. I mean, in presidential races are tough races. So I guess my question to you as a professional politician, if you were talking to other superdelegates, you're not a superdelegate, your wife is a delegate for Obama, we should mention. But is the bloom is off the rose here. I mean, is how tarnished in a general election do you think Barack Obama is compared to six weeks ago?
By all rights, a good year for a Democrat to run, given the fact that there's a war that's very unpopular that McCain is identified with, Barack's identified as being against it. The economy obviously is in recession. And so to the extent that he can stick with those issues, which are the, when you think about it, those are important issues, right? The war and your daily, whether you can pay your bills, those things are going to be focused on. The Republicans have no choice but to go after the fact that he's a liberal Democrat and try to get into these other I would call them lesser important issues. So the question is going to be, how effective is it going to be? I think that the reason why I think Barack, assuming he gets those Clinton people back, is going to win is because those are so overwhelming issues, the war and the economy, that it's going to, not that it's not going to be close, but I really think that that he will prevail as a result of that.
How has he, in your view, responded to the adversity of the last 6 weeks?
Well, I think he definitely, you know, my personal view of him, knowing him from 8 years working in the General Assembly, he never really, I've never seen the guy lose his temper. I've never seen him swear at anybody. I mean, we've had some, a lot of senators get involved in heated issues over a period of time. He's always been cool in that regard. And he's, to me, obviously, that he's shown good judgment. He's very bright. Worked very well as a legislator. As a legislator, we had the first 6 years we were in the minority with Barack. So we had to talk to the other side. That's this part about working with the other side. It's real. Just as I would concede McCain has done the same thing in the U.S. Senate. So the last 2 years, when the majority, he kept on working with those Republicans, resulting in some Republicans saying real nice things about him. So I think that judgment, that working in the legislative process, is something which is going to stay true as he campaigns.
Early on, one of the questions, and again, this was referenced, by George Stephanopoulos the other day about Reverend Wright, and the question is, there was a reason why you chose not to have him involved in your announcement speech. He was your spiritual advisor for many, many years. There's a reason he was not involved. You knew something, or somebody knew something, that this guy was a ticking time bomb. Knowing that, John, don't you think they would have handled the Jeremiah Wright issue a little more effectively than they did?
Well, first of all, I was there when he made the announcement, and thank God he didn't have Jeremiah Wright, because it was 8 degrees. So we didn't want a long introduction by a black minister, because it was freezing. I obviously, the question is, on all these issues of guilt by association, as Dan said, it's your association with them. Okay, it's how much do you want to hold some bad things that somebody else said or did to the person who has the relationship, and I truly think that
but early on they thought this guy was not a positive.
Right.
And my question
is, the press knew that too. I remember before that February announcement in Springfield, it was a major discussion at the time. What I don't understand, I was following Bill Clinton, but if I were a reporter working for a newspaper, I would have gone to Wright's website and I would have found those CDs. Why didn't a single reporter?
Is this an indictment of the Chicago media?
Well, I think the Chicago, no, because I think Lynn Sweet has been brilliant. And there are a couple of good reporters on the Tribune. I think that the Chicago papers have done a far better job than any other newspapers anywhere.
No hometown.
But somebody should have looked at Wright, because he said it.
Well,
and
10 seconds. And the Clinton campaign. The Clinton campaign, where have they been for 15 months? Why is Bill Ayer's name just coming up now? Rashid Khalidi, the Reverend Wright. I mean, this stuff should have come up in 2007.
We've got to pause. That is it for hour number one. Our thanks to our Democrat, John Cullerton. Our Republican has been Dan Proft. And Carol Felsenthal has been here offering her assessment from a media and writing perspective. We're going to be back with another full hour. If you're watching us on television, see you next week. When was the last time someone offered you a second chance to save thousands of dollars? If you owe the IRS or state at least $15,000, American Tax Relief is offering you a second chance to eliminate up to 85% of your delinquent taxes. Thousands of honest, hardworking Americans have turned to American Tax Relief for the help they need. Look, your tax problem isn't going to go away. In fact, it's only going to get worse unless you get help. Call 1-800-449-1415 for a one-time professional fee. American Tax Relief can get you the second chance you've never had before to save up to 85% on the taxes you owe. Get the second chance you deserve and save up to 85% on your delinquent taxes. Call American Tax Relief for a free consultation to see how much money they can save you. Call 1-800-449-1415. That's 1-800-449-1415.
For free confidential small business advice, call SCORE at 800-634-0245 or log on to score.org. Every year, thousands of people get help from SCORE when starting or growing their companies, and you can be one of them.
My SCORE counselor taught me how to create a business plan and make sound financial projections so that I could get a small business loan. I don't think I could have approached my bank so confidently without SCORE's help.
SCORE mentors can help with business planning, cash flow management, and market analysis.
My SCORE mentor walked me through the steps of identifying a market, researching the competition, pricing my product, and so much more.
Call SCORE at 800-634-0245 to meet with experts who have been in your shoes.
All I really needed was a sounding board for my ideas, someone I could trust. My SCORE counselor talked me through my business questions and gave me the courage I needed to expand.
If you're a small business owner or thinking about starting a company, call SCORE today, 800-634-0245, or visit score.org for free confidential advice. SCORE is a nonprofit association and a resource partner with the U.S. Small Business Administration.
It's time to stop what you're doing and go red for women.
Go red.
Start loving your heart today. Visit goredforwomen.org.
Go red.
take the Go Red Heart Checkup. Get to know your own heart.
Go Red.
The American Heart Association invites you to help stop heart disease.
Go Red.
To Go Red for Women and give your heart the love it deserves.
My name is Teresa. I was a good mother. Then I tried meth and quickly became addicted. I abandoned my little girl to chase my next high. 8 months later, my daughter begged me to come home. Her plea made me enter drug treatment. My recovery wasn't easy, but I've been clean for 4 years now.
Meth is a powerful drug that affects everyone. If you know someone who's using, get involved. Treatment is available and it works. For more information, visit methresources.gov or call 800-662-HELP. Sponsored by Office of National Drug Control Policy.
Live from Chicago, this is Bruce Dumont. We continue with our second hour of Beyond the Beltway. Tonight, offering commentary by our Democrat, John Cullerton, veteran member of the Illinois State Senate who served with Barack Obama for many, many years, Republican political commentator Dan Proft, author Carol Felsenthal, whose new book is called Clinton in Exile, A President Out of the White House, and we'll also be talking with Matthew Briette, from the Commonwealth Foundation in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. He'll be bringing us up to date on what's transpiring in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, and we're going to bring him into our conversation right now. Matt, nice to have you with us on Beyond the Beltway.
Well, thanks for having me, Bruce.
For those listening around the country, we're all on the edge of our seats. We would like to get a sense from the Keystone State as to what is likely to happen based on everything you've read, everything you've heard, everybody you spoke with. You're joining us from Harrisburg, the capital, which is almost dead center in the middle of the state. What's the sense, first of all, on the controversy of the last couple of weeks about Barack Obama's comments about small-town Pennsylvania? How devastating, if at all, is that statement?
Well, I don't think it was all that devastating for him because Barack Obama's strength is really in our urban areas, Philadelphia and Pittsburgh and the collar counties around there. That's where he's hoping to win big, and he's hoping to not lose too bad in what is called the T part, kind of the central Pennsylvania and the upper tier of the Commonwealth.
And this is Dan Proft. And how much is Rendell and Murtha and kind of the Pennsylvania Democratic machine, how much of that is those folks are cutting into that urban base that Obama, you know, kind of seeks to capitalize on?
Well, it's been quite interesting to see some of the politicos, how they've lined up. You do have Ed Rendell, who, of course, was the DNC chairman during Bill Clinton's presidency. So they have ties going way back. But then you also have Senator Bob Casey, who endorsed Barack Obama. And you have some of the up-and-comers within our state legislature that have jumped on the Barack Obama train. So you really have a diversity within the Democratic Party as to where they are lining up and causing some real division.
Matt, aren't there also about 100 mayors of mid-range towns that have jumped on the Hillary Clinton bandwagon?
They have, and a lot of this, you know, Ed Rendell has been great at handing out taxpayer money to a lot of those mayors and got them on board with those contributions that he's made to those areas. So a lot of these folks are in those more rural areas, and those people are your old-line Democrats, the union-backed, pro-gun, pro-life. So they're not going to fall more toward that urban liberalism that Barack Obama has really displayed in Pennsylvania.
Is Pennsylvania a much more redneck state than most of America perceives it to be?
Well, I don't think so. I think you do have the areas where guns and hunting and that lifestyle is quite big. Our large population centers, of course, are very urban. Philadelphia thinks of itself as its own state, and it doesn't even know where Harrisburg is for all intents and purposes. But we do have a large population in the central part and the western part that does love their guns and loves their hunting and the outdoors.
Carol Felsenthal is here. She is an author of a new book called Clinton in Exile. Carol?
I was interested to note that the newspapers have come out in support of Obama. The big papers have. and that the Pittsburgh Tribune Review, is it, the SCAFE newspaper, has endorsed Hillary. And
they have.
Does it matter? I know newspaper endorsements generally don't, but in Pennsylvania, does it matter?
No, they tend not to. And it is rather interesting that you have the Tribune Review, which is a SCAFE paper, very right-leaning editorial board. However, I guess they were determining between Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton, but I would not be surprised that she does not, or he does not, receive their endorsement in the general, of course.
That Hillary won't. Because
SCAFE
was the guy who started the Arkansas Project, which gave Bill Clinton all the headaches and investigated his sexual activity. So it was surprising. I was wondering if there's sort of a double agent thing going on there.
Well, it was interesting because I know Barack Obama received the endorsement of the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, which is the larger competitor, of course. And Hillary then accepted an invitation to sit down with the editorial board of the Tribune Review. And I know Dick SCAFE sat in on that because he wrote a fairly long commentary that surprised a lot of people, that he reflected on the conversation, and it almost sounded like he actually enjoyed Hillary.
John Cullerton is our Democrat. He supports Barack Obama. He's got a comment.
Matt, as you know, Obama lost the popular vote in Nevada and in Texas, and yet he actually won more delegates in Nevada and Texas. And by the way, for those of you who don't know how that could happen in Nevada, lose the popular vote and win more delegates, you've never spent any time in a casino. But Matt, isn't it possible that, and since this is really all about the delegates, that Obama could actually do fairly well or maybe even win the delegates, even though he would lose the popular vote to Clinton?
Oh, yes, absolutely. He seems to be wooing a number of people. I mean, Bob Casey,
I'm not talking about the superdelegates. I'm talking about actually win delegates in the primary on Tuesday. Win more delegates than her. Because there's more Democrats in those areas that he's stronger at. I know that, for example, the congressional district where Philadelphia is, they have something like 9 delegates, primarily African-American. If he got more than 85% of the vote, he gets all of them. So
you're correct, and in fact, what they're showing is that in Philadelphia, you have 2-1 or 3-1 in favor of Barack Obama. They're even in those collar countings, the areas surrounding Philadelphia County, and there's still 10% undecided. So they could really break, you know, either way. And I think you're absolutely right.
We were talking in the last segment about if we go look at the general election in November. If Barack Obama is the Democratic nominee, he might have a problem picking up some of the blue-collar voters that might be going for Hillary. And again, you know, the voters are going to decide on Tuesday, so we're going on sort of what some of the projections are suggesting, and that it could make Pennsylvania a very competitive state and one that might be attractive to John McCain. Do you see it that way?
Oh, yes, I do. In fact, I was talking with a Republican pollster not too long ago, and to my surprise, he thought that McCain would definitely want to face Barack Obama in the general election, which that goes against what I thought would be the case, that all Republicans would love to have a run against the Clintons once again. So it seems to be that a lot of the political pundits and people that pay attention to this even closer than I do think that that is who John McCain would much rather see in the fall.
There also was a rumor a couple of weeks ago that Tom Ridge, the former governor of the Commonwealth, might be on a list, even though he is a pro-choice Republican. Has there been much discussion of his future on the McCain ticket?
No, we heard that early on, but that has really died off, and McCain is nowhere to be found. I know he has been in the Commonwealth, but he's certainly not making it into the newspaper, at least the front pages, during his visit. So he's not the talk of the town, at least for the next couple of days.
Matt Briette is joining us. He is the executive the chief executive officer of Commonwealth Foundation. That's in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. He joins us from Pennsylvania this evening, along with our in-studio guest, John Cullerton, Dan Proft, and Carol Felsenthal. Back with your calls at 1-800-723-8289.
You've heard the horror stories about meth. It's a powerful, dangerous, and highly addictive drug that's having a serious impact on our communities and horrible effects on families across the country. But there is reason for hope. Treatment for meth addiction is available, and it works. All it takes is someone to care. If you know someone using meth, get involved and help them get on the path to recovery. For more information, visit methresources.gov or call 800-662-HELP. Sponsored by Office of National Drug Control Policy.
It's time to stop what you're doing and go red for women.
Go red.
Start loving your heart today. Visit goredforwomen.org.
Go red.
And take the Go Red Heart Checkup. Get to know your own heart.
Go red.
The American Heart Association invites you to help stop heart disease.
Go red.
To Go Red for Women and give your heart the love it deserves.
From Scranton, Pennsylvania to Sandusky, Ohio, you're listening to Beyond the Beltway, 1-800-723-8289. We've got callers on the line. Let's go to Susan, listening to us in Chicago on WLS. You're on the air coast to coast. Go ahead.
Thank you. For our listeners around the country and in Pennsylvania and Indiana, Mr. Culleton, could you name Barack Obama's three greatest achievements in his two terms in the Illinois Senate? I regard him as kind of an accidental candidate. If it weren't for Jack Ryan, and I believe Blair Hull with some a touch of scandal in their marriages, he wouldn't be even in the U.S. Senate.
By the way, I should mention that you are referencing a Democratic primary candidate against Barack Obama, Blair Hull, and a Republican candidate, Jack O'Ryan. For those around the country, Jack O'Ryan was Jack Ryan was forced off the Republican ticket because of some charges of sexual escapades that did not play well in a Republican primary.
Well, first of all, Barack served 8 years in the Illinois General Assembly. The first 6 years, we were in the minority, so it's very difficult to pass legislation when you're in the minority. Yet he worked very well, was well respected by the Republican senators. In fact, one of them even did an ad for him in this primary season. In the 2 years that we were in the majority under Barack Obama, I would say the death penalty reform bill that he passed was the first in the nation. It was a very significant piece of legislation dealing with videotaping confessions in homicide cases. It was an achievement in getting the state's attorneys as well as the prosecutors to come around and be in favor of that legislation. Same thing is true with the racial profiling bill that he passed, which was unheard. Well, I shouldn't say unheard of, but the toughest in the nation.
You're chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee.
That's correct.
Was he a member of your committee
for all 8 years?
Okay,
and obviously, you know, a Harvard Law graduate, entered the law review. He's a brilliant guy, but also we were talking about this earlier. Very likable.
But he was not a leader in terms of being a majority-minority leader in any way whatsoever.
Well, he was a leader in terms of passing important legislation. Whether you get appointed to a leadership position is less significant.
He was the lead sponsor of that legislation?
Right, lead sponsor of the bill dealing with the videotaping of folks who are charged with murder. You know, obviously, if you want to compare him to other people who've run for president, I'd like to look at Jimmy Carter, Bill Clinton, Ronald Reagan. They were governors. Barack Obama, having served in the legislature, I like to think that counts for something. I'm a little biased because I've been in the Illinois State Legislature for 29 years. But in terms of even his foreign policy, he's had more experience being a U.S. senator than those governors did, and the legislative experience that a governor has had as well. So I think it's very well-rounded experience for a guy who was actually older than Bill Clinton when Bill Clinton ran for president, but still a relatively young guy.
What foreign policy experience?
Well, the foreign policy experience that you have when you run for president when you're a governor is very, very limited. And that's where our presidents have come from. Ronald Reagan, of course, as you know, was a governor who had very little foreign policy experience, and some people think he did a good job. Barack Obama has served in the U.S. Senate in addition to those years in the Illinois Senate.
But you mentioned foreign policy experience of Barack Obama. What was it?
The same as, if not
in
better than
Senate.
Ronald,
yeah.
In the U.S. Senate, yeah. Being the foreign
policy. Susan, I think we got your drift. I don't think you're going to be an Obama supporter. Let's go to Naperville, Illinois, where Tom is listening to us on WLS. You're on the air with our guests around the studio in Chicago, and also Matt Briette from Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. Go ahead, Tom.
Yeah, hi, folks. First of all, I'd like to say this show needs to be 3 hours, not two. But
okay.
I just wanted to say...
You have to start paying us.
I was born and raised in Marion, Ohio, and I grew up with a stark awareness of historical incompetence called Warren G. Harding.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, I see striking parallels to Mr. Obama and his high likability, great order skills, and great looks. But he also has remarkably razor-thin knowledge and experience, which, again, makes him a parallel to Hardy. I can live without the experience.
Razor-thin knowledge in what particular area?
His complete bumbling of the tax comments and how I'm not going to raise taxes, but I'm going to raise capital gains taxes. Well, sounds like the word tax was in there to me. And when I hear him continuing to dance around subjects, and he is dancing, I can accept the lack of experience, but I cannot accept the lack of knowledge.
What is the subject that he dances the most about, in your view?
Anything economical. He absolutely just runs from anything about the economy. He instantly switches into actor mode. He's a great actor. There's no question about it.
Tom, let me ask you a question. At the presidential level, when was the last time there has been a candidate for president who, in your view, really understands economic and fiscal issues?
Reagan.
All right.
Reagan understood.
Nobody since
Reagan,
then.
Here's my point.
There's
Reagan
an answer.
Drove the point home that said lowering taxes increases money that comes into the economy. He was able to get that through to people. It is not about being the expert on the subject, but it is understanding the subject enough to relay and teach to the general public, as well as through the other politicians, to drive home the point.
Matt Briette, let me go to you. You also host a radio show called The Box on WHP, 580 AM in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. The people that you run into, the people that you deal with in your broadcast, what are the reservations that they have about Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton? What do they talk about when they talk about them as candidates?
Well, they talk about them not having real plans and talking about change and talking about being different or bringing experience. They're not talking about the hard things that they really are going to have to deal with. The idea that somehow we're going to be able to have universal health care and it's not going to cost us a nickel. People will not be fooled by these things. They understand that government, more involvement, whether it's in health care or education or in the economy, is always going to cost us. And, you know, that kind of relates to Barack's comments about being bitter in Pennsylvania. And I don't think people are bitter because they're not getting enough government. I think they're bitter because they're getting too much government. And that's the frustration I'm hearing about Hillary and Barack all in the same.
And insofar as some of these issues which have been described as trivial issues, how they're playing, I mean, the issue of Hillary's lie about the sniper fire in Bosnia, as well as the Reverend Wright controversy and the small town, you know, Pennsylvania controversy, of those issues, which to many people are non-issues, are those issues that people are talking about at all?
No, they're really not, and I was quite surprised that the Reverend Wright didn't stick more, that there were seemed to be more legs on the bitter comments that were made, and I think that it is really just a where there is no other primary going on. People have been just hanging on these things, and I think they are trivial, and I would like greater discussion on the issues. How are we actually going to achieve all of these promises that both Barack and Hillary are making all across this country?
John Cullerton, in your view, you've been as a candidate for office, as you said, you've been in office for 30 years, and you know one of the things that a lot of people like to say during campaigns, well, you know, the candidates aren't addressing the serious issues. We need the plans. In your view, does the general voter really know, really care, really understand the intricacies of issues?
I think if some viewers really care about issues, they can go to these candidates' websites, and they'd be amazed at how much detail there is. These position papers, when I ran for Congress, the questionnaires you have to fill out takes up half a day, and it's great. It's a great experience because you have to learn about issues. But it things come down to things like likability. I think John McCain and Barack Obama have won or will win their primaries because both of them tend to be more likable than the people they were running against. And that's the kind of thing that in people you can trust, people you kind of say, you know, he's kind of a smart guy. I don't think personally that these issues, the side issues about his association with people who've done bad things is going to stick at the end. I think it's going to come down to whether or not they feel like the economy, of course, is not going well. That's going to help Obama. The war is not going well. That's going to help Obama. And I think people are going to decide, I hope that they vote for him, of course, because they feel he's minimally qualified, okay, to be the president. And then beyond that, they like the idea that maybe he can start breaking the gridlock in Washington, which people have come to hate.
But part of the reason why you're not getting into these detailed discussions of the issues and the competing plans for how they're going to engineer a nationalization of healthcare in this country, which is a horrible idea, but part of the reason you're not getting into these details is because there's not a gnat's eye worth of difference between the two of them in terms of the positions on all of these issues. When one of them is the nominee, and then you will have clear contrast, and you will have a lot to talk about in terms of McCain's vision for healthcare in America versus Obama's, McCain's vision for tax policy in America and job creation in America versus Obama's. That's where there's a chasm of difference, and that's where you're going to get the substantive policy discussion.
And I would agree, if I can jump in, I would absolutely agree that it is just a difference in degree, not kind, when it comes to the Hillary and Barack. When you read the newspapers here in Pennsylvania, you would think that we are electing a homecoming queen or king,
right?
That it is on, you know, popularity and personality, charisma. All of the comments from people interviewed in the paper, that's what it sounds like. It doesn't get into the issues, which I think is troubling, but I think you're right. We're going to have to wait for the fall to really have a real discussion on policy issues.
Matt, we've got 30 seconds left. I go back to you. Look into your crystal ball. Tell us what, in your view, is likely to happen come Tuesday in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania.
Well, I think Hillary Clinton pulls it out, but she had a 20-point lead just a few months ago, and it's been narrowed to about 5 or 6 points. And we'll see what happens with all of the new Democratic registrees in this last about.
And over 250,000 of them?
Yes, it was an astronomical amount, a lot of party switchers as well.
Party switchers as well. And also, again, as John Cullerton mentioned, not only look out for that popular vote, but look out at the closeness between who picks up the delegates, because, again, there could be a very little difference between who wins and who finishes second. Matt Brulette, thank you very much from WHP 580 AM and the Commonwealth Foundation in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. I'm Bruce Dumont, back live from Chicago shortly. When was the last time someone offered you a second chance to save thousands of dollars? If you owe the IRS or state at least $15,000, American Tax Relief is offering you a second chance to eliminate up to 85% of your delinquent taxes. Thousands of honest, hardworking Americans have turned to American Tax Relief for the help they need. Look, your tax problem isn't going to go away. In fact, it's only going to get worse unless you get help. Call 1-800-449-1415. For a one-time professional fee, American Tax Relief can get you the second chance you've never had before to save up to 85% on the taxes you owe. Get the second chance you deserve and save up to 85% on your delinquent taxes. Call American Tax Relief for a free consultation to see how much money they can save you. Call 1-800-449-1415. That's 1-800-449-1415. From El Paso, Texas to Elmira, New York, you're listening to Beyond the Beltway, 1-800-723-8289. Also, everybody listening on XM Satellite Radio, POTUS 08, Channel 130. Nice to have you with us this evening from coast to coast as well. Senator John Cullerton is here. He is an Illinois state senator. He's been down in Springfield serving his constituents for 30 years, a member of the General Assembly, first in the House and then in the Senate. He is the chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee and served for many, many years with Barack Obama, who also served on that committee. Dan Proft also joins us. He's been involved in Republican politics for many, many years in the city of Chicago as well, in the county of Cook, and he is now a political commentator for Don Wade and Roma every morning on WLS Radio, at least every Monday morning. You're offering your comments there. And also, you give a review, the American Idol review.
I do. One of my guilty pleasures is I love American Idol. And so every Wednesday morning now, I get at 7:15 Central Time, Central Standard Time, I opine about American Idol just to show my range.
American Idol,
yes.
And the politics. How about
that?
Yes. Carol Felsenthal also joins us. She is author of a new book called Clinton in Exile, A President Out of the White House. The book is going to be published officially. It's published by, who's the publisher?
Well, it's William Morrow. It's a division of HarperCollins.
Very good. And the book is coming out on May 6th. But give us a preview. First of all, the Clintons were not cooperative with you. This is not an authorized look into what he's been doing.
No.
They've made your life a little miserable. But tell us, if you will, what do you think is, what is the most significant thing that you believed about Bill Clinton when you began the project that you no longer believe? What changed in your research?
Well, I am a political junkie, so I followed Bill Clinton through his 8 years in office. And I have to say, in answering that question, that I'm not really going to answer it in the terms that you propose. I thought that he was a narcissistic and reckless person when he was president. And I think that he has been a narcissistic and reckless person, but I put an ultra before those two words as ex-president. This is a man who is enormously undisciplined. One of the people I interviewed for the book was Leon Panetta, who had been his chief of staff, and I didn't get any of my interviews. I did 167 interviews in a very short time, because I had a short time to write this book, and I worked 20-hour days, honestly, to get everything together before I could start writing. The Clintons stood in my way every step of the way, both Hillary and Bill and their people, and they made me jump through hoops. They were never going to let me talk to him. They were never going to let me talk to her, but they made me believe for several months that if I just sent them another Federal Express package to Bill's office in Harlem, it might happen. Leon Panetta talked about how Bill Clinton, like my 16-year-old son, likes to stay up all night. He's an adolescent. You can understand it. Bill Clinton would keep these incredibly strange hours when he was president, staying up, talking to people on the telephone. During the impeachment mess, he was calling every friend he could, some of whom are now supporting Hillary, like Chris Dodd, talking to people, or Terry, now supporting Obama, Terry McAuliffe, all these guys who are close to him, expressing his woes, woe is me, why are they picking on me? But the bottom line was he would stay up all night. Then they would go into meetings, policy meetings, and this was true in both terms. Bill Clinton would fall asleep at the table, and his eyes would roll back in his head. The guy was exhausted. Not even Bill Clinton liked to think that sleep was for losers. I mean, the guy's, there's something terribly immature about him. And I do believe he told somebody who I interviewed, who wouldn't go on the record, in 2006, Hillary won't run for president because she can't win. And I think he was shrewd about that. He said she'll be a wonderful majority leader in the U.S. Senate. But since he's been running, or since he's been involved in her campaign, he has made so many major stupid mistakes that you can only think that he has some psychological reason that he wants to see her lose, except that I think he really wants to see her win because he considers it a vindication and he plans to have a co-presidency with her. So that stuff is all in the book in elaborate detail and backed up by interviews.
When you look at the way, I want to just follow through up what you just said about the campaign. You say he may want her to lose.
How else can one explain, for example, most recently, in the book I cover the campaign, his role in Hillary's campaign through the March 4th primaries. But more recently, the Bosnia flap, a humiliating, inexpressibly embarrassing lie that she told that was disputed by the videotape. It had finally begun receding, and people were beginning to look at the Reverend Wright again and at Bill Ayers. And then Bill Clinton raises it, and in the course of raising it, either lies or is carelessly inaccurate when he said, oh, Hillary said that because she's 60 years old, raising a doubt about whether she really has the stuff to be, the stamina to be president, and she said it late at night. Well, it was very easy for the press to come back and say, no, she didn't. She said it 10 o'clock in the morning and 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and she said it several times.
You know, one thing I want to get your response, John, and also Dan's. I gave a speech a couple of months ago in which I was talking about, what is going wrong in the Democratic primary and why is Obama a surprise and Clinton, a surprise, on the other way. And I made the point that, you know, there was so much hype about the vaunted Clinton machine. There was so much. It was so great. Even early on, when she lost Iowa, you know, Chris Matthews and others were saying, "Yeah, you watch when she comes out, she's how they're going to spin this. Watch the way the Clintons are going to spin the loss in Iowa." And then, of course, she comes out and she's surrounded by Madeleine Albright and
Bill Clinton.
And Bill Clinton
who's biting his nails and looking
horrible.
Old.
Yeah. But my point is, I think that's totally fraudulent, because the point is, he was a minority president twice. He won the presidency. You can't dismiss that. He lost Congress under his watch. And when you look at her candidacy for the U.S. Senate, I mean, she beat two very weak candidates for, you know, Lazio and Spencer, I believe, was the other person. So, upon what do you make a case other than just a lot of New York inside the Beltway hype that this guy is, you know, the greatest thing since sliced bread? What makes him such a great politician? I think it's totally fraudulent. John?
Well, when he left, he had, you know, the third of the people that hated him when he was president. They still hated him. But he did have, because of, whether you want to give him credit for it or not, the economy and foreign policy issues were pretty positive at the time he left. His approval ratings were fairly high. But the two-thirds of the folks that liked him would have continued to like him if he had not gotten as involved in this campaign for his wife. You know, George Bush didn't get this involved for his son when he ran for president. And as a result, he's just become so... when you go negative, your own negatives go up. And this is exactly what Clinton has done. He has been involved in the trenches, and he went after Brock. The biggest, first big mistake was in South Carolina, and it's just gotten worse. And so his own image has really been tarnished by his involvement in his wife's campaign.
I mean, look, I'll give Bill Clinton credit, actually, for being a savvy politician. To Carol's point, for somebody as undisciplined as she just described to rise to be a two-term presidency president from...
Plus Perot, he always at first window.
Yeah, true, but I mean, he was a very young attorney general in Arkansas. He was governor of Arkansas. I mean, this is not somebody who was without skill or without intellect or without ability, political ability.
But he lost elections. He did come back, but he lost elections.
Right, but I mean, there's still... in that primary that he... where he was the nominee to run against George W. Bush... H.W. Bush. I mean, he came out of nowhere then, too. This was some governor nobody ever heard of from Arkansas. So, I mean, there's some...
But he beat Paul Tsongas.
I understand. I mean, but that's always the case of, you know, it's always kind of relative, and politics is a lot about timing. But there's still something there in terms of a political talent. Now, that's not necessarily a compliment, but it is the reality. But I think John's point is right on. You asked earlier, was the Bozzia thing the biggest slip-up for the Clinton campaign? South Carolina, because he destroyed that campaign in South Carolina. She had momentum after winning New Hampshire, surprise victory, going down to South Carolina, and then he turned South Carolina into a race issue. He actually believes his own press that he was the first black president. It was the craziest, stupidest thing you could have done.
She had the support.
Right.
She had the African-American support.
She blew him.
She had about 40% of the African-American vote up until then, and she got down to 10.
She had more African-American support than he did.
He blew her up in South
Carolina.
And now
he has 90%. I agree with you. South Carolina is where everything changed.
Based on your research, is Bill Clinton corrupt? Is he a deal maker? Is he sleazy? Is he a double dealer, or is he corrupt?
He's sleazy. He has business associations with people who he should not have business associations with. Ron Burkle being one of them.
Why shouldn't he have them with Ron Burkle?
Because
Ron Burkle owns supermarkets in the West Coast. Is he a billionaire?
He's a grocery store billionaire, because his deals with Bill Clinton, which have been largely unexamined by the press and will be minutely examined should Hillary become the candidate, are laden with conflicts of interest. I mean, there are so many of them that involve Bill Clinton going and greasing the skids with some leader of a foreign country that the State Department of the United States has all sorts of problems. It's sort of analogous to what we're seeing with Jimmy Carter going and talking to the leaders of Hamas. I mean, you know, this is in Colombia was one that, you know, it came out. Some of these were front page stories from the Tribune, the New York Times, and the Wall Street Journal, and they came out during important primaries. Nobody talked about them.
The book is Clinton in Exile. The author is Carol Felsenthal. I'm Bruce Dumont, 1-800-723-8289. Lots of callers left. We will bring them in and hear them for the rest of the way when we continue live from Chicago.
For free confidential small business advice, call SCORE at 800-634-0245 or log on to score.org. Every year, thousands of people get help from SCORE when starting or growing their companies, and you can be one of them.
My SCORE counselor taught me how to create a business plan and make sound financial projections so that I could get a small business loan. I don't think I could have approached my bank so confidently without SCORE's help.
SCORE mentors can help with business planning, cash flow management, and market analysis.
My SCORE mentor walked me through the steps of identifying a market, researching the competition, pricing my product, and so much more.
Call SCORE at 800-634-0245 to meet with experts who have been in your shoes.
All I really needed was a sounding board for my ideas, someone I could trust. My SCORE counselor talked me through my business questions and gave me the courage I needed to expand.
If you're a small business owner or thinking about starting a company, call SCORE today, 800-634-0245, or visit score.org for free confidential advice. SCORE is a nonprofit association and a resource partner with the U.S. Small Business Administration.
From Sharon, Pennsylvania to Terre Haute, Indiana, you're listening to Beyond the Beltway, 1-800-723-8289. Next Sunday night, we will be looking ahead to what is likely to happen in Indiana and North Carolina. Their primaries come up the following week on the 6th, and also we will be reviewing what happens in Pennsylvania this coming Tuesday. And also, if you're listening to us on our flagship station, WLS, Tuesday night, Dan Proft and I will be back on WLS, our flagship station, and we will be offering our reaction to the national ABC coverage of the Keystone primary. Let's go to El Paso, Texas. Nick is listening to us on KTSM. Nice to hear from Texas tonight.
Good evening.
Good evening.
Yes, sir. I gave Jimmy Carter and I gave President Bill Clinton the chance to be a great president. But they threw it away. I believe it hurts Bill Clinton what he knows now after 9/11, after Saddam and all that, that he would have done all everything. He would not have let the slaughter go on in the Yugoslavia or in Rwanda. You know, I believe he thinks he could go back and redo his presidency and be a great president. But he dilly-dally around, you know, and play golf too much, and that was it.
And it kills him.
Well, it wasn't the golf playing that got him in trouble, but... But anyway, thanks very much for your call. We do appreciate it. Let's move on. Let's go to John in Rockdale, Illinois, listening to us on WLS. Go ahead.
God, Clinton was such a hack. Bruce, you hit it right on the head where he was the most overrated president ever. As far as I'm concerned.
By the way, let me just. I did not say he was the most overrated president. I think he's the most overrated, you know, political Machiavellian genius. That's where I think he's overrated.
Well, the thing that you hit it right. He was the minority president twice.
Yes.
Without Ross Perot, he's a footnote in history. And I'd like to preface all my following comments. I voted for him. I thought he would bring change.
Did you vote for him twice?
I voted for him once. The second time, after he turned into the stereotypical Southern Bubba, I almost cried because he threw away in 92. Bill Clinton threw away the opportunities in 92 to take the nation in a totally different course, the same way that George Bush threw him away in 2000. They wasted political capital, they wasted momentum, they wasted demographics, they threw it all under the train for the sake of their own vanity, their own policies, their own twisted agenda in the lobby.
So, John, you stand by your thought that Bill Clinton is the most overrated president in history? Let's put you in touch with Scott. Scott, are you listening to us?
I am.
Scott's listening to us. He's driving through Texas, and he's listening to us on XM Radio. You have a different view of Bill Clinton. To set John straight.
I certainly do, and I'll tell you exactly why. Because the 1990s, to me, regular guy, I'm not a politician by any means. I'm a nonpartisan voter. I haven't made my mind up. I'm voting for in November. But I remember the 1990s as a great time in my life. I was prosperous. I was optimistic. I was safe at home. It was a beautiful time for me. Everything, listen to me, everything that the 2000s are not.
Go ahead, John. Back to you, John.
And any kind of monkey could have shepherded the ship of state up until the millennium. If people were spending, remember, computers were going to shut down, planes were going to fall out of the sky. They spent so much money that, remember the boom for the internet? There was so much money that was made and then disappeared that the economy, it could do nothing but go up.
Back to Scott. Final word to you, and then we're moving on, Scott.
The fact is that Bill Clinton, like him or not, was chairman of the board. Partisan hacks will give him no credit, but the fact is I will remember him as the president of the country during a very good period in my life. I'll remember George Bush and the Republicans as a period that has been very sad and depressing for me the last 8 years.
Okay. Thank you very much. I didn't mean to cut you up, but we are moving to Val, who's also listening to us on XM Radio. And Val is calling from Putnam County, New York. Where's Putnam County, Val? Are you there? Val, are you there? Well, I did not cut Val off, but we'll never know where Putnam County is. Let's go to McHenry, Illinois. Bill is listening to us on the Big 89, the home of Tom Roser. Go ahead.
Yes, I'd like to ask the author's comments about Hillary and her husband. I agree with him 100%. My question would be, how much is his presence in the campaign dragging her down? Obviously, his missteps and her misspeaking, the combined together, have done terrible things to her popularity. But to what degree does he stand as the 800-pound gorilla here, is really dooming her candidacy?
I think he has definitely hurt her. I You know, there's one other point that I want to make. I don't know how to quantify it. I'd say on a scale of 1 to 10, it's about a 4. Bill Clinton essentially had 1.25 terms as president. He wasn't a two-term president. The Lewinsky scandal broke on January 21, 1998, almost exactly 3 years until January 20, 2001, when he left office. And those 3 years were largely wasted. And that's where you can really say that Bill Clinton wasted his opportunity, because he did do some good things before that. And I think one of the best things that's been rather controversial is his welfare reform policy. I think that's something that he'll be remembered for and given great credit.
Yep. We are out of time. Our thanks to John Culleton, senator from Illinois, state senator, and a longtime friend of Barack Obama. Thank you very much for carrying the water for the Democrats tonight. Our Republican guest has been Dan Proft, and he is with WLS Radio, a commentator. And again, he'll join me Tuesday night in our analysis of the Pennsylvania primary. And Carol Felsenthal is here. She is author of the new book, Clinton in Exile, A President Out of the White House. Book's not going to be available for a couple of more weeks, but Carol will be on again when we can talk more about the life of Bill Clinton after the White House. This program is a Genevieve production, produced in association with Wilbur Entertainment and WLS Talk Radio. Our thanks to Stephanie Lecce and Tom Veracruz for their assistance in the production of this program. Until next week, this is Bruce Dumont. Good night from Chicago. When was the last time someone offered you a second chance to save thousands of dollars? If you owe the IRS or state at least $15,000, American Tax Relief is offering you a second chance to eliminate up to 85% of your delinquent taxes. Thousands of honest, hardworking Americans have turned to American Tax Relief for the help they need. Look, your tax problem isn't going to go away. In fact, it's only going to get worse unless you get help. Call 1-800-449-1415. For a one-time professional fee, American Tax Relief can get you the second chance you've never had before to save up to 85% on the taxes you owe. Get the second chance you deserve and save up to 85% on your delinquent taxes. Call American Tax Relief for a free consultation to see how much money they can save you. Call 1-800-449-1415. That's 1-800-449-1415.
For free confidential small business advice, call SCORE at 800-634-0245 or log on to score.org. Every year, thousands of people get help from SCORE when starting or growing their companies, and you can be one of them.
My SCORE counselor taught me how to create a business plan and make sound financial projections so that I could get a small business loan. I don't think I could have approached my bank so confidently without SCORE's help.
SCORE mentors can help with business planning, cash flow management, and market analysis.
My SCORE mentor walked me through the steps of identifying a market, researching the competition, pricing my product, and so much more.
Call SCORE at 800-634-0245 to meet with experts who have been in your shoes.
All I really needed was a sounding board for my ideas, someone I could trust. My SCORE counselor talked me through my business questions and gave me the courage I needed to expand.
If you're a small business owner or thinking about starting a company, call SCORE today, 800-634-0245, or visit score.org for free confidential advice. SCORE is a nonprofit association and a resource partner with the U.S. Small Business Administration.
It's time to stop what you're doing and go red for women.
Go red.
Start loving your heart today. Visit goredforwomen.org.
Go red.
And take the Go Red Heart Checkup. Get to know your own heart.
Go red.
The American Heart Association invites you to help stop heart disease.
Go red.
To go red for women and give your heart the love it deserves.
My name is Teresa. I was a good mother. Then I tried meth and quickly became addicted. I abandoned my little girl to chase my next high. 8 months later, my daughter begged me to come home. Her plea made me enter drug treatment. My recovery wasn't easy, but I've been clean for 4 years now.
Meth is a powerful drug that affects everyone. If you know someone who's using, get involved. Treatment is available and it works. For more information, visit methresources.gov or call 800-662-HELP. Sponsored by Office of National Drug Control Policy.